Right, we head now to another beautiful area, although I have to say it's a long way from Macedonia. Julia Strauss runs an eco-ranch in British Columbia, Canada, but by chance is also familiar with Macedonia, having covered the wars amongst the former Yugoslav states during the 1990s. He went on to cover the conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq, and eventually became the Daily Telegraph's Moscow correspondent, where he reported on the sieges at Moscow's Dubrovka Theatre and School No. 1 in Beslan. So, Julius, let's talk about your previous career first. How did you become a journalist in the first place?
I think it was one of those things that I just sort of drifted into it. I didn't set out with any plans to become a journalist. I certainly didn't want to become a journalist when I was a young man. But my father's Hungarian and my mum's Welsh, and I grew up in England, in this country. And I suppose there was a sort of a restlessness in me because of that, and a wanting to know and a wanting to discover. And I happened to be in Hungary when the Yugoslav war started. And that was not too far from where I was, and it was just too much of a magnet. I wouldn't say it was attractive, but it was certainly compelling, both in a bad way and a good way. And so that sort of drew me in.
What, like a sort of war voyeur, as it were, if you like?
I suppose initially. I mean, I wouldn't have liked to be called that at the time, but looking back on it, I have to admit there was a very voyeuristic quality to it. There was also the notion that both my grandfathers had fought in wars. My brother was in the army. My father fought in 1956 against the Russians in Hungary. So it was something that was very much part of my background and something that I felt familiar with, but I didn't really know anything about. So when this war sprang up literally 150 miles from where I was sitting, it was just too difficult to ignore. And also there was the whole idea that, you know, I was brought up, I was part of the generation that believed there would never be another war like that in Europe. So that was another draw, I suppose. And once I got there, I found it horrifying, absolutely repulsive.
So you weren't a journalist at this point. How did you learn the trade?
I didn't really learn the trade, although I managed to fool people for a long time. I was one of those people who just drifted into it. I went to the Serbo-Croat War first and then the Bosnian War. And I literally phoned up the Daily Telegraph and said, you know, I'm here. And they said, that's very interesting. And I phoned them up from somewhere else. And finally, they took a story for me from Budapest, which I was thrilled at. They ran about 200 words at the bottom of the newspaper somewhere, which I wasn't quite so thrilled at. But that was how the whole thing started. And I wasn't the only one. There were several people of my generation, particularly around that time during the Bosnian War, that you just kind of got into the paper a little bit more and a little bit more, but you were never really a professional journalist. And one day, several years later, I woke up and I thought, well, I'm actually a journalist now.
And was the itinerant part of it, the travelling part of it, was that part of the appeal of the job, moving, as it were, from place to place?
Yes, definitely. There's a huge logistical aspect to covering, well, to working in any foreign country, really. But the further away you get, the more difficult it becomes, the more logistical elements there are to it. And if you work as a print journalist, or like Dervla, if you do your own thing and you travel on your own, you really have to deal with those logistics yourself. It's very different if you work for television or a large organization where somebody else does it for you. So just the kind of the thrill of putting together the logistics of travel in a war zone, there is a thrill to it. It's very difficult. It can be dangerous. It's not always dangerous, though. It's a bit like, you know, people have said to me, is it a very dangerous job that you did? If you look at the highlights over 10 years, I suppose it is. But it's not on an everyday level necessarily dangerous.
Well, also, I mean, both my father and my brother were in our foreign correspondents, and they always talk about the camaraderie of the press. That was a big appeal. Travelling is a sort of a gang of people.
Yes, there is. I was very young, and I was very proud, and I wasn't a proper journalist. So if at the slightest sort of inclination that somebody was putting their nose up at the fact I wasn't a proper journalist, I would be off in the other direction. And I think there's probably a certain healthy element to that, which is that particularly as a young beginner, you tend to go off and try and do your own thing rather than following the press pack around. And that put me in good stead. So throughout my career, the best stories I did were always on my own or in a very small group of people. It was never as part of a big sort of news, media conglomerate, if you like.
Now, there's no question that you saw some awful things, and I wonder whether it was the awful things that you saw that made you give up war reporting, and you now live in splendid solitude in Canada.
I suppose there were lots of things that came together. I worked for the Daily Telegraph for 10 years, and like all papers, it went through different changes. And the most recent change I didn't agree with. That was one aspect. But a more sort of positive aspect, if you like, was that I felt that I'd been doing, although the scenery kept changing and the events kept changing, I'd been doing the same thing year after year after year after year. And it did take a toll. It does take a psychological toll on everybody who does this kind of thing. There was another aspect as well, which is that I'd been fairly recently divorced from my first wife, and I'd met a new woman, my present wife.
Oh, it can change your life.
I know. And it was, we'd met just before Beslan, the school massacre, very, very shortly before that. And we'd actually agreed to meet again that weekend, and I think it was Friday, and it finally, the explosions, the whole thing sort of fell apart. So I cancelled that weekend. But when we did finally meet, I mean, to her credit, she didn't say anything at all, but I could tell from the way she was behaving with me. And also I realized myself that if I kept doing this kind of thing, I was just going to lose out.
Well, now you run an eco ranch in a remote part of British Columbia. Tell me about it.
Well, it's the most gorgeous place I've ever been to in my life, which is why I stay there. And I say that having seen some wonderful places like Afghanistan and the Caucasus. And I mean, I've been very lucky in my life. But there's something about that place that we just came across it almost by accident, really. And fell in love with this little valley in British Columbia. It's near the Rockies. And we begged and borrowed and stole, as the saying goes, to get the money together to buy it. And we bought this tiny little place. And we've set up a sort of, as you say, it's an eco ranch. And we take guests, mostly from Britain, but anybody's welcome from all over the world. And we show them grizzly bears and we show them black bears. And we show them, if we get very lucky, we might see wolves. We show them moose. And we try and show them this amazing little... It's part of the inland rainforest. It's an incredible environment. And we try and get people for a few days at a time and take them out and show them the best of what we have.